call this meeting to order. Pledge allegiance. Kathy, would you please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Karen Armstrong.
Here.
Kathy Buckley.
Here.
Leonard King.
Here.
Dan Karaski. Richard Levine.
Here.
Ed Marin. Carol Reyes.
Here.
Pauline Stone.
Here.
Steve Trombley. Devin Anderson.
Here.
Okay, item C, approval of the agenda. Resolve that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education the approval of the agenda.
Motion.
Second.
Seconded by Kathy. All in favor? Well, wait a minute. I have an addition to the agenda that will be under the miscellaneous. It will be item D.
What page will that go on?
Page 6.
Page 6.
Number 9, WZ.
Okay, thank you.
Are you going to say what it is, or just...
Do you have to read now, or you just have to get there, you can insert it?
Yeah, at the time, I will read with the...
I'll amend my motion to include that.
Your second? You have that? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Pass. Okay, need a clerk pro tem for our executive session.
No, just keep going. Just go in.
We don't need to?
No, but I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I'm fine with that.
You're good. Okay. Amen.
All right.
You're okay.
A motion to go into executive session.
I shall move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
You have to state the reason. You have to
say the reason...
To discuss a person, particular person's employment history?
Particular person's employment history, yes.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Now our teachers have been increasing ratios 10 to 1.
Anybody else for public comment? Greg?
I do. I'm Greg Myers, president of the Eatontown Teachers Association, and I have a short statement for you. I missed the last board meeting, but I understand there wasn't any public comment anyway at that meeting. And it's with great disappointment that I address you this evening. The fact that I have to dispel rumors that were discussed by the board at an open public meeting is not something I enjoy or feel I should be in the position to do. However, when some board members make comments and treat them as fact without proof or verification, and then those rumors are repeated in the community or in the media, it borders on slander to the teachers. These discussions were inaccurate, half-truths, and some were completely false. And I feel it's my responsibility as a union president to address each of those. There were four that I would like to just address. The first one was, there was a discussion about teachers wearing buttons in school. The purpose of those buttons was to raise awareness and to get out the vote. It was an error, it may have been an error, to place a check mark to vote yes. However, once the teachers were made aware that this was controversial by our superintendent, we decided to stop wearing them immediately. Those buttons were worn for only a few hours one afternoon. I'm sorry, I've lost my place and I'm jumping around here. For 1 hour by some teachers one afternoon, and it was only in the middle of the high school. They were never worn in either elementary school. Again, our purpose was to get out the vote, not to influence the vote as yes. Okay? That happened on Thursday, and we stopped Thursday afternoon and stopped wearing them on a Friday morning before the vote. Sit-ins. There was discussion that teachers had incurred sit-ins. On the morning of the sit-ins occurred, the students arrived to the school and refused to attend class. They proceeded to sit in the hallway and were not intending to go to their first period class. After several minutes passed, administration decided, for safety issues, it would be better to move those students into the auditorium. Some teachers aided in the encouraging of the students to go to the alternative site. To my knowledge, no teacher encouraged students to organize or participate in the sit-ins. In fact, several teachers asked students to go to class and encourage them to find a better way to express their opinions without missing valuable class. The third issue was students voting. This school has been offering the state-required participation in government class since the early days when Mr. Sherman was their teacher. I started in 1988, and it's been part of their curriculum since before then. By its very definition, voting in elections is a key component in this curriculum. From the first day when students walked into the class, whether it was in the fall or spring semester, students were encouraged to register and to vote. Students were encouraged to register and to exercise the right to vote in the November elections and in the local school elections. This practice has been happening for the district for many years, and never once did the instructors of this class direct students to vote yes. The final issue that I have, and it deals with Mr. King's comment about teachers using school lists for phone numbers. You even went as far as saying that you knew it was fact. Well, Mr. King, the BTA Public Relations Committee, and myself ran those phone bank meetings. And in fact, I acquired the lists that were used. And those lists were acquired through the Clinton County Board of Elections. And they're open for anybody who wishes to ask for those lists. The BTA did not use school numbers to make those phone calls. By you saying that we used those numbers and by affirming that it was a fact, was wrong and not true and should be withdrawn. As the BTA president, I feel it's important to dispel rumors to the best of my ability. As board members, you have a responsibility to the public to be accurate in what you say in an open meeting. Discussion of rumors and allegations, alleged behaviors by school district employees is not appropriate and should not be tolerated. If you have questions about an employee's actions, please follow the correct protocol in handling those issues. Thank you for your time.
Anybody else for public comment? Okay, we're going to go on to presentations. On behalf of the board, I'd like to thank all the people there that are retiring for many years of service that you've given this school district, and we're very proud to have had you here. We hope you have a very good, long retirement. Thank you.
In advance of your receiving the plaque, I would echo the comments of Mr. King and your appreciation for those who have given multiple years of service to the district. There are different years, of course, for your experiences. You know who you are, but I'm going to embarrass you as I read the years of service on your diploma so that those around you will finally hear the truth as opposed to what you've been telling them for who knows how long. But in all sincerity, congratulations to you in this new chapter of your life, and we wish you well as you move forward. The first individual to be recognized is Richard Perron, 42 years. Yep, 42, I have to read it again. 42 years of dedicated service as a custodial worker. If Richard is here, I'll be glad to present him a certificate. He may or may not be here. But congratulations to Richard. Also, scanning the room, I don't know if I see, but Mark Haley. Mr. Haley had 37 years of service, both as a special education and elementary education teacher. Mark Haley. And I know this gentleman is here,
yeah.
Calvin Houston. Calvin, for 35 years of dedicated service.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sharon Kaye? Sharon here this evening? Okay, Sharon is not. Again, for Sharon, recognition of 32 years of service, the dedicated service as a typist in the high school. Yeah, I think I know who he is. Mr. Fuller, Kenan Fuller, 31 years. Education, driver's education instructor.
He still sings.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're back to it. Mary Williams. Mary Williams is completing 31 years of dedicated service in the business education team. Kevin Hebert. I know Kevin is over here. 26 years of dedicated service, senior automotive mechanic.
Thank you.
You're back. Simone Lutz. Simone is here. Thank you. 26 years, teacher of gifted and talented program. Corrections in years that go up, we don't talk about. Corrections that go down, we'll be happy to fix. Eileen Frenier. Eileen is completing 25 and I believe a half year, 25 and a half years of dedicated service elementary education. Next is Rochelle Armstrong. Rochelle is completing 23 years of dedicated service as an English teacher. Roberta Grindle. Roberta is completing 21 and a half years of service as an elementary teacher, all in dedicated years. Thank you. Elizabeth Betsy Baker, 21 years of dedicated service as English and Spanish teacher. It runs a mean kitchen, I might add, when we do some of those special events for students. So. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Deborah Misak. Deborah here. Deborah Misak, 21 years of dedicated service as a bus driver. I'm going to do my best.
Mrs. B.
Mrs. B. as Shane tells you. Help me though, Shane, please.
Rosacchio.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Rosacchio. I wanted to put him on the spot. Elizabeth Rosacchio, 20 years. And Esther Baker, 17 years, dedicated service, school bus monitor. Again, thank you for those who are present in the acknowledgement of your years of service to the district, and we will, of course, extend the same acknowledgements to those who could not be here this evening. I will do so with a quick note, so thank you.
On behalf of the board, we have a ex officio student board member there. It's his last meeting, and we have a little presentation.
Devin Anderson. Here's your memento for your ex officio student board member representation between July 2010 through June of 2011. Congratulations to you, sir. There you go.
Okay, we go on to our next topic, child abuse prevention. put on by Rochelle Beach.
Rochelle Beach is here, and I'm very pleased to introduce you to Rochelle. We've been trying to get this presentation for a couple of months now, and we finally have a good opening at this point of time. I think you're going to appreciate the information. I know it has some data connected to it from a county point of view. And, it, of course, I think there's handouts as well, am I correct, in front of everyone? So from the Child Advocacy Center, I'm pleased to present to you Rochelle Beach.
My name is Rochelle Beach. I'm the Executive Director of the Child Advocacy Center for Clinton County. That's under the District Attorney's Office. And my center deals with all child sexual assault cases and all severe physical abuse, meaning anything prosecutable. Probably by the end of the year, I will also cover all natural substances, all burns, and all maltreatment cases that are prosecutable. We work in collaboration with law enforcement, both the city PD and the troopers, the Department of Social Services, of course, the District Attorney's Office. We now have a mental health component, a medical component, which we previously did not have in this county. We're training medical personnel up for what's called a forensic rape examination for children under age 12. We don't have that currently, so hopefully we will have that in place by the end of the year. I'm sorry to come after the award ceremony. I want to make you all aware in brief, we were started up in 2008 with a grant from the District Attorney's Office under Krista Sprague. Of course, now Andrew Wiley has taken over that grant. And last year we saw over 76 cases, all but two were sexual assault cases. Our greatest number of cases last year were children between the ages of 4 and 7. And we did have 10 three-year-olds through the center. Some of those are not, obviously some of those end up in custody battles and issues, but many of them are real and happen, and unfortunately you can't prosecute most often that young of a child because of the testimony. It's just not solid enough, even if we have medical evidence. So, some sobering things to tell you, and I will keep it brief. In New York State in 2009, there were 2,586 forcible rapes. Children ages 0 to 5 account for approximately, and this is national, 14% of all reported sexual assaults. Children ages 6 to 11 are 20% of the victims. Children ages 12 to 17 are 33% of the victims. So overall, that's 67% of all reported sexual assaults are children under age 17. The reason I'm hitting Beekman Town so hard, because the highest rate of occurrences is falling to Beekman Town School District. To date, we have 11 children for all sexual assault in Beekman Town School District, which is the highest by double of any other school district in Clinton County. I know you don't want to hear it, but I have 2010 statistics in here for you, and you can see the victims' characteristics, their age. You can see most frequent, 4 to 7. Yes, you see that. That's 4 to 7. And they were all sexual assaults last year. And of course, 10 were 0 to 3. We have the perpetrators' characteristics, and we want to get rid of this myth. It is not strangers. 98% of what we saw last year was family members or strong acquaintances to the family. Significant others, grandparents, uncles, almost always it's someone that's very close to the child. The reason we see the spike, probably most experts would say, between 4 and 7 is because the first time a kid enters school and can be identified by a professional that can report the abuse. Also to note that we did have, you'll see the statistics for 2010 are raw data, so if they didn't report the age, that's why the numbers are off when we didn't put the age. But we have two that, quote, unknown. Well, we have two that we did not know, and they both involve internet texting, where they're trying to hook up a date with a 13-year-old. Other than that, the unknown category means we know that something happened. Either we have medical evidence, something significant that we know happened, but we can't identify who it is. And a three-year-old, it's hard to tell if it's uncle or dad or mom or someone close to them. So unknown doesn't mean we didn't know who the person was, per se, a stranger, but we knew it happened. We just couldn't identify with accuracy who it was. So that's kind of scary. But the second numbers I want to point out is I did a little quick number of 2010, or I mean, I'm sorry, to date 2011. and Beekman Town is the yellow-green color. And you can see it in relation to the other school districts. Last year was the first year we were open, so I did not keep track of specific school districts. This year I did, so I could go to each school district and encourage them, the whole point of you being here, starting sex education in the elementary school. I'm not saying that you have to talk about sex, but if you can use the correct anatomical words, I'm not hoping you're not going to shock penis, vagina, anus, those three words, because those secrets are what help the perpetrator get the kid not to tell. They're not dirty words. If we use them in health education classes, head, elbow, penis, done. Let's start talking to kids that it's not strangers. It could be people in their homes and what exactly it is. And we've had several incidences where Planned Parenthood comes to fourth and fifth grade where they're talking about sexual abuse, where kids are like, oh yeah, that happened to me. And then it gets reported. If we could start younger, it's fourth and fifth grade, it's too late. Too late. The other numbers I printed out for you were the ages of the victims in this school district so far. And you can see the highest category is the 6 to 9 running right now. So if you think of a fourth grader, it's already too late. That's as brief as I get, so.
Take questions.
And do any of these other schools have education that early?
No. And you know, it hasn't been mandated. We're trying to push it right now. I have the mandate of the law in here. New York State is embarrassing, I think. New York State, I don't know if everyone knows this, has to have STD and HIV education in all grade levels, but it doesn't, and they do not have to have sex education, and none of their education has to be medically significant. So it means there has to be no medical backing for sex education. So we talk about STDs and HIVs, but we don't have to talk about sex. That's an embarrassment to me as a professional. I don't know how you don't talk about medically significant sex education and these two topics. But they're trying to push a mandate right now that will require medical evidence, or I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of the, I'm putting the wrong word in, but it has to be medically accurate sex education classes.
By what grade?
All grades, I have it right here.
Kindergarten,
in elementary school as well. Yeah, Ed?
So I guess from our side, what can the institution do to improve mechanism of information so that children before the age of 6 to 9 have an avenue to voice their situation? What is it that schools don't do? Obviously, this sounds like it's a national problem, right?
It is.
And the problem isn't just what's happened as much as the lack of communication available to the children. So what can we do to change this cycle so that it is available to the children?
That's what I'm telling you. In the health classes, when you're talking body parts, use those words in the body parts so kids know what they are and what they're used for.
So I guess what I'm getting at is are there any curriculum improvements, programs that have been put in place in the country anywhere that we can look at as a reference, that we can go as a guideline to start with?
Yes, there are a couple, and I will look them up.
That would be great.
The mandate, comprehensive, medically accurate, and age-appropriate sex education must be taught in all public schools, grade 1 through grade 12. That's what they're pushing through right now. It's just to establish a curriculum that's medically accurate. And that's coming down the pike, so, I mean, it would be nice to be proactive.
Is that something that an elementary teacher can teach, or do we have to bring somebody in for that?
I think it's up to you, but I will look it up if you want to see what you have to do. I know right now you bring Planned Parenthood in for fourth and fifth grades. I think what makes most sense is to include it in health, in your health classes. You know, when you're talking about hygiene, then it's not scary to the kids, and you just make it part of life.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I noticed that the other school district that's the same size as we are, Peru, proportionally, they're less than half. What do you count that? Just the way it is?
I have some ideas, yes. I think education, I think the education level tends to be a little bit higher for Peru, for the sports and things like that. I think that we have many pockets of poor populations here, and with poor populations comes lack of education, substance abuse, domestic violence, all those things that would incorporate this type of abuse.
One quick question. Rochelle, we know, of course, that there are information requirements from on predator laws, and typically notification is given to school districts when there is an individual placed on. How does that in any way happen in the cases like this, where the school gets notification of abuses of children? In this case,
we are. Right now, what currently happens, as you know, a kid gets hotlined or a family gets hotlined. Yep. There's an investigation process, and we're trying to also push schools to be more open about it. Where an investigator, it's called a joint investigation, and an investigator and a CPS worker come in, and the reason that they have to come in the school is to assess the safety of the child before they go home, because most often the perpetrator is in or around the home. So supporting that joint investigation, but by law, we cannot notify you of what's happening in that family.
No, that's okay.
That's what you were asking.
Yep.
Yeah, we can't say, you know, if you see me working with a kid or one of the investigators coming in, there's a good chance that that's happening, but we can't say this is what they're being accused of, because due process and, you know, they have a right to the judicial system.
Yeah.
Is there an information release policy for a way for a family to sign a release to communicate with the school?
There's absolutely releases that we put in place. Okay. So we have that team that I work with, and we release information amongst us. But again, very careful on what information is shared. And I know everyone in the community is worried about those red spots for child sex offenders. And I tell everyone in my presentations, the red dots are not scary. They're identified. The perpetrators are in homes. They're not those red dots. It's just statistically, those red dots aren't going to snap your kids. It's somebody that's already around them, unfortunately. And the best method for prevention is to talk about it. And make it aware that it could be anyone. If we also educating the parents, if we have a forum, and let them know how young this is happening. And it's in our community, and it's amongst our kids. And we also see kids acting out. A seven-year-old doing something to another seven-year-old on the school bus. And that seven-year-old is perpetrating also as a victim. They didn't learn that, in a dream. We also have a huge issue being in school with teenage sex. I'm sorry to say this, but yes. And then once the victim's identified, there's been a lot of bullying and peer pressure for the victim not to continue through with charges and to recant on their story. And all the names that come with it. If it's a girl, then she's a whore or a slut, and she wanted it, or she's been doing it with other guys, and for her to press charges, even if it's forcible, there's a lot of pressure for her to recant and not go forward with it. So supporting the victims. Anything else?
No.
Ask the public if they have anything.
They're sobering. They're sobering.
So what state is like leading the charge or doing a good job at this?
Texas is the lead in child advocacy work. They do most of the trainings. They're phenomenal in joint investigations and prosecutions. Unfortunately, most cases don't get prosecuted. Children are not deemed credible witnesses to jurors. They change their stories, and if you work with children, you know why that is, but jurors might not know. And so they seem like they're not credible. It's very good.
Registered nurse at CVPH. My question is to the school. You have a nurse, I believe, in the elementary, middle, and high school. Talking about sex education for these little guys and the smaller grades, is it something that an RN can do, go into the classroom, do a short presentation as to this is a body part, and you or, you know, something that's yours, it's private, Is that something that the school nurses can get involved with, since we're not having a sex education class for these children?
I would do it for free, you know, just to get it out there. And it doesn't have to be, I mean, we think sex education in elementary school, it doesn't have to be sex. It's just including the body part, and we talk about your body safety in your space, just including that. That's all. So it's not a secret, and it's not used against the victim to feel like it's taboo or hidden. It's as simple as that in the young grades. And to be aware that anyone can abuse you, and anyone can invade your space, you know? With my children, I use people they know for their names.
Shell, there's one there.
Sorry. Frank?
I was just going to say, I mean, this is what's being reported to the district attorney in this county. The percentage of actual incidents is going to be much higher than that.
It is much higher.
I mean, it's pretty scary when you think about it.
Yes. 76, last year there were 93 cases of abuse in the county involving 105 children. And CPS estimates that to be maybe two-thirds, a half to two-thirds of actual cases that are out there. Which that is scary. We just can't catch them. It's hard, you know, it doesn't want us help. We do know for a fact, the older the kid gets in the situation, the less likely they are to tell. These younger kids tell by accident, usually. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I got a question for Amo instead of Michelle. So there's two issues there. One of them is education, whether it's a nurse or Michelle coming in and talking to the students. Then there's the other one is who's responsible in our buildings, whether it's a social worker, psychiatrist, psychologist, for managing manifestations that could be from this. So you have an example of bullying in the bus. So not having the awareness of the reasons why kids act out, or the ability to address them, can be an avenue for people to slip through the cracks, if you will.
Yeah, surely.
So what is our policy? What is our mechanism?
It's really every professional, everybody employed in the school district has a responsibility to act in the capacity as a mandated reporter of concerns. And so we do in-service every year at the beginning of the school year to inform the staff of what that law means, what are the incidences that you need to be on alert for, what your responsibilities are in the event that you have suspicions of concerns. But even short, prior to even that occurring, is just the awareness, and that's partly why I have Rochelle here this evening, raising the awareness of everyone who's associated with children, be it in a school setting or a daycare setting or in the home setting, if you will, that the data is what it is, the circumstances are what they are, and they're very difficult to be primary investigators of. We typically get information secondary and third course. Very seldom, as a three-year-old, as has been reported, will announce on a given Monday or Tuesday, I want to go through some details with you of what happened this weekend. So it takes the caring concern of an astute observer to pick up a clue, to pick up a signal, to pass that on as a mandated reporter for those individuals who are certified and professional in the community to then come in and do the investigation. And that's a real strong link that we currently try to do. And even with that effort, sad to say, the statistics would point out there's still young people that are being damaged by the events.
And it's nationally, it's 50-50 boys and girls being abused, sexual abuse, almost 50-50. This county is a little less right now, but it's almost 50-50 nationally, which is scary because that means boys are underreporting here. A and B, I've talked to some of the school personnel, once a kid discloses to you, try not to elicit more information than you need to hotline. Save that for the investigation with someone that can write it down properly.
Good.
Our staff has been trained to do something called a forensic interview, which is non-leading questions, and it pulls out better and important. The more stories we have that the kid tells, the less credible they become.
I just have a question. Your numbers that we don't have a copy, are they based on reported through school, or are they just all cases? So it doesn't have anything to do with the schools reporting the number of cases?
I would say no. I would say it's just countywide, because a lot of our reports are community-based. not specifically schools. And I am not privy, I'm not, technically I'm not privy through the Department of Social Services to know who reported it. Because you have to keep the anonymity protected. Due to District Attorney's Office, I kind of am privy, so but we would never come out with those statistics.
So it wouldn't be because our school is reporting more than any other district?
I don't think so. Usually it's the young ones, but possible. Anything else?
Behind you.
Yes. Just out of curiosity, does your agency have, and this is complete speculation, possible literature that could be included in a packet to send home kindergarten registration? Or, you know, something that's a sealed envelope for parents to review, just to bring awareness to the parents so they can educate their children before they come into the building? Unfortunately, if they choose to.
Absolutely. I can get literature, we can work together on literature. Unfortunately, though, I'm not public. I can only be accessed when the system's in place, when the hotline comes to the Department of Social Services or through law enforcement. So I'm not open to the public and specific for these cases. So people can't call me, and I really can't do much for them. I have to go through the system. But yes, I would work as far as awareness and education. That is part of what I do. I would work with you to come up with a packet, or I would come up with something that someone has that we can use.
Could a presentation, Michelle, similar to this, or maybe a modified presentation, be available at the opening of school when we have everybody?
I'm at your disposal.
Okay, great.
Whatever I have to do.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take advantage of it. The offer's there, and we don't have a budget, but the offer's there.
Okay, we carry on. Superintendent, report?
Yeah, a number of good news items and observations over the shoulder and things to come, I guess. One of them is just strong acknowledgement, public acknowledgement to those students who participated in the 2011 NISMA Solo Ensemble competitions. We had the pleasure of approximately 2 weeks ago, I guess now, of listening to the performances of a number of our students who performed their pieces that they were performing for NISMA. And so it involved a number of different pieces, as you'll see. Andrew Perrier was sang bass for a particular piece as a bass soloist. Andrew Baker played the French horn as a soloist. Courtney Wilson did the alto saxophone. Lillian Stiles was a soprano, performed a piece as a soprano. And Sarah Wang played on a piece from Beethoven on the piano. We missed, unfortunately, another presentation. Devin Anderson and Michael LeClaire were going to WAWIS with their percussion ensemble that they presented at States as well. But I just wanted to acknowledge those individuals. And for I believe a couple of board members were able to make that. For those who weren't, it was a really inspiring evening on behalf of the performances of those students. So that's good news. Second piece, on June 10th, Champlain Valley Educational Services held its graduation ceremonies, which several of us were able to attend. And at the ceremony, congratulations were given to, and I had the pleasure of presenting diplomas to two Beacontown students, Nathan Doner and David Leggett, who were present to receive their diplomas through CVS. Also receiving at the high school graduation ceremony, we will have Joshua Dufault, James Harrison, and Gabriel Rock, who have chosen to get their diploma recognition during the regular commencement exercises. So that was also a very good event, very inspiring event as well. Mr. Batten thanks a whole bunch of people for your participation in the honors dinner that was held on June 8th. It was a smashing success from my point of view. I say smashing because we only broke a few dishes back in the kitchen that nobody knew about. But there are a lot of volunteers who participated in making that evening a wonderful success, and we hope that the families that were able to be present and be so honored were felt that it was a good event for you. Certainly on behalf of the volunteers, it was a very, very worthwhile effort for us to be there. So again, congratulations to the many volunteers who participated. did just received a letter from, and did Rochelle leave? I was about to say she's got double duty tonight. Rochelle Beach, who was acting as the PTO treasurer for the Beekman Town Elementary School, has presented a check in the amount of $500 from the PTO, and it is to replace a slide that is broken on the Beekman Town Elementary playground. A slide was damaged, and in researching what it was going to cost and who was coverage, etc., the Beekman Town Elementary School PTO stepped up and paid $500 for the repair of that slide. I will have this in your board packet. I didn't get it in time for your packets, but I wanted to be public with that announcement for you this evening as well. Again, good news. And also, Mr. Knight was kind enough to remind me in an email on June 8th that there was a presentation on anti-bullying task force organized at the middle school for grade six, for grades two, or periods 2, 3, 5, those are the periods, but it was the middle school grades. And there were presentations on the subject of bullying, how to identify it, how to stop it, tips on avoiding being in a bullying environment, how to respond if you felt you were. Also invited, and probably picked up on the airways, quite frankly, were representatives from WPTZ, who covered and the North Countryman and the Berg contacted were contacted to attend the event, and I understand several did. So again, with Mr. Knight present, if I'm not butchering my presentation too much, I understand it was a well received, and congratulations to a number of individuals at the middle school who made that possible. And I believe Mr. Bill King was a primary person as a counselor who was able to pull this off with the kids. So again, a great event. And finally, another good news item from, again, Beekman Town Elementary School. The PTO put together for the board and its membership, actually, a itemization of the activities of which they were involved in this past year, which contributed to, and I'm reading a particular line here, with your help, the PTO was able to put over $20,000 of things, events, and real items, supplies, materials, etc., back into the school. So there's a complete listing of what those items are. Again, I received those just recently. They weren't in your packet, but I definitely will put it in your packets as well so you can be acknowledging the particular events. And, of course, on behalf of the board, I will be sending thank you letters and congratulations letters to all of the individuals I've identified this evening. And that will conclude my report.
Any questions, Superintendent? School Business Executive, Eric.
We have a couple of items. One, the first one that I wanted to mention was I followed up with New York State Education Department today to inquire how soon they would have the 2011-2012 grant application available for the EduJobs grant. That is the grant that we use to provide the early retirement incentives. And all these retirees who receive the incentives, who receive their plaques tonight, are interested in how soon after July 1st will we be able to do that. The application is not yet available. The lady that I spoke with is going to speak with the director and find out. They're hoping within the next couple of days it will be available. The turnaround time is expected to be a couple of weeks. I've tried to set expectations with retirees that we're shooting for the second payroll date in July as the date that we hope to be able to do that out, but that's not through the general fund budget, that's through the grant. So I'm really dependent upon State Education Department getting that grant application available for us so that we can be up and running on July 1st. The other item is there are budget transfers on the agenda tonight. There's one that I want to bring to your attention that resulted from a couple of committee meetings going back to Operations Committee in January and February when we were evaluating a priority listing of items under the capital project. And one of the items on that was backup HVAC and air conditioning for some of the server and switch rooms. We have 14 different areas throughout the campus here in Cumberland Head where there's air conditioning units. When those fail, we could potentially lose some very expensive equipment. One time last year, we actually had an event where the air conditioner went down for some reason. The cost, the ticket item that was on that priority list from the architects was about $40,000 to do whatever they had to do with the HVAC to provide a backup system.
Gary thought, Mr. Lambert, our IT director, that by contacting a contractor who provides monitoring service, environmental monitoring, that perhaps we could add a couple of extra probes that would electronically provide email messages and alerts, pagers, to IT people on the weekends, that if a failure occurred, they could actually come in and manually intercede and save the $40,000 HVAC project. So Gary had reserved the money in his budget this year, which is why I wanted to bring to your attention. You see a budget transfer going from a materials and supplies or contractual code. We've contacted NARIC in Albany, which is the capital region BOCES. The contractor is through them, so we can run it through the BOCES contractual services that we already subscribe to, and it will be eligible for aid as well. So it's an unusual budget transfer, but there's a little bit of history behind it coming out of operations. We also have coming up this summer, starting pretty soon in a week or so, we lease two of our buses to Town of Plattsburgh and three to Town of Beatontown or vice versa. Basically, we put five buses out on loan for students of the town, of the school district that live in those various towns. Town of Plattsburgh, we actually charge a mileage fee. They pay for their own driver, they pay workers' comp, they pay all the payroll taxes. They, you know, service, they just use the vehicle, but they provide the services and the insurance to us. We charge them a mileage rate, which effectively reimburses us for the capital cost, because we keep these buses over a 10-year period of time. We've calculated what that cost is, what the band cost is for the interest, and they reimburse us. With the Town of Plattsburgh, I've learned that, Town of Beatontown, we actually have a reciprocal agreement with them. We don't charge them the mileage rate. In exchange, what we receive from the Town of Beatontown is the use of the park and the fields for various class events and as well as the athletic sports events that occur over on those fields. So that's coming up for the board to approve. I just wanted you to know the finances behind it that are happening in the background. We also had a request for a donation from a principal at CVES. We have a lot of surplus equipment sitting at the West Jay-Z building. They wanted 30 classroom chairs and some metal lockers that are out there. And at first blush, we have a lot of excess material. We'd sell it as surplus salvage. But when I saw what they actually wanted, it's these chairs. We have 30 extra of these chairs in storage there. They aren't padded. They're just the wooden ones. So once I learned what they wanted, we're happy to give them some of the old metal chairs that we have that are still, the granite seats are still functioning. But I would suggest to the board that we'd have to decline their request to have these chairs. We just purchased them in 2003, and they cost about $116 a piece. So I think that there's still a value to the district. We still use them in various places on the campus here in the library. While we have the padded ones, we could very well use the ones that are not padded. Those are the reserves that we have. So in case you hear a little grumbling, they thought they were going to get it, but I'm kind of reneging on that, saying, yeah, I'll give you chairs, but not the ones you want. The capital project, the Excel project that's been going on for a couple of years now, we have bands. The capital band that's on that is coming up for renewal, the $6.5 million. It comes up in July. We just finished working on the prospectus that's going to get printed and go out to print for capital markets to bid on interest rates for us for the next renewal term. I also received a memo today from the Office of Real Property Tax Services of New York State alerting school business managers to let boards of education know that they have sent a memo to local tax assessors advising them that it would be okay to extend their application periods for residents to apply for STAR. Previously, there was some kind of a due date on that, and you had to apply for the STAR as your primary residence by a particular date. They're being a little more flexible, and they have assured the school district that if somebody retroactively receives an approval from a tax assessor, that they will reimburse the school district for that STAR exemption. And the last item that I have is just to let the board know that our pilot payments that we budgeted for this year, 2011-12, we were reconciling them to close them out for the year, and we have one outstanding payment from Salerno. I just received notice from the county treasurer's office today that they had received a letter end of March, early April, where the local IDA had received a request from Salerno. There's some reorganization and restructuring going on corporately with them. for the titles to be transferred, and there's some question as to the collectability of these pilot payments. The pilot payment is $60,000. It was due last fall. The agreements included interest and penalties. Due to the reorganization, I'm not entirely sure of the legal status, so I've sent an email to the school attorney asking for his advice on this. So also that question would be this, we are in year 13 of 15 on that particular pilot agreement. So it's at the end of it. I guess that's the good news. The bad news is, aside from the collectability of this year's revenue source for that, is also that item was included as a revenue source in next year's pilot revenue income. So just to get it on your radar screen, I don't know what all the fine details are yet and what the agreements were. We've got to have our attorney circle back around with IDA and the county property office and treasurer's office to find out what's really happening with that. Those are my updates.
That's all.
Any questions for Mary? Okay, Mr. Devin Anderson.
I won't be topping her tonight.
No.
Not too much. The senior picnic, which I couldn't be at, was last Thursday, and from what I know, it went well. Emily Morrison, Ben Smith, and myself were chosen to speak at graduation, along with Colleen Bradley, who's our class valedictorian. That's on the 24th. This weekend was also the track and field state meet, which was held out near Rochester. Quite a drive. We only had three of us go: Jess Huber, myself, and my younger sister Emily in ninth grade. But we actually did pretty well. Jess and I both medaled in our events. I medaled in discus, and she medaled in the 200 meter dash. And my younger sister did pretty well for her first time. She had one of her better throws of the year in discus, so she didn't really choke under the pressure, which was nice, which I did twice. So this year I did a little better. I took third in Division II, so not bad. I think, I can't remember what I had the number, but I can't remember if Jess got second or third, and then fifth in Federations. She did very well again. Well, last year, and she broke the section record.
I saw that. Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And other than that, finals ended today, and Regents start tomorrow. So the end of the year is here, and I just would like to thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to sit on the Board of Education. It was a good experience.
Thank you. Yeah, for the board, it has been a pleasure to have you.
You're a great representative. Thank you, Ben.
Okay, continue on. The minutes. Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the minutes of the meeting of the Board of Education held on 5-10, 5-17,
5-23.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Against?
Have it. Who's second?
Carol.
Item B, resolved that the Board of Education does hereby accept the minutes of the committee meetings held on 5-10 Audit Committee and 5-10 Operations Committee.
Move
it. Motion by Red.
Second.
Second by Kathy.
Yeah, we'll
Kathy. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Under new business, A. Resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education the approval of the CSE recommendations dated 6/14/11, and we also have a couple of more pages here dated 5/5.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Karen, second. You want to take a minute to look at the new ones that were brought to you today? Questions on them? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Okay, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education the approval of the CPSE recommendations dated 6/14/11.
I'll make a motion for this. Is there another one, too?
There's another one, actually.
So, make a motion for both.
Second by Carol. Everybody had a chance to look at that one? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Personnel, number one. Some elimination of positions. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to abolish the following positions for reasons of economy effective June 30th, 2011. Abolish the position of two school social workers. The persons having the least seniority in the tenure area of school social workers are Natalie Ward and Russell Gray. These individuals shall be placed on a preferred eligible list of the district in accordance with the Education Law, Section 3013(3). B, abolish the position of a 40% elementary teacher held by Cynthia Graziani. Cynthia has no recall rights because this is only a 40% position. C, abolish the position of a 40% elementary teacher held by Jennifer Karen. Jennifer Karen has no recall rights because this is only a 40% position. Abolish the non-competitive position of 40% teacher aide, student aide. The person who holds this non-competitive position is Amanda LeDuc. There is no recall rights for this 40% position. Abolish the competitive position of 3.6 computer lab assistant. The person with the least seniority in the title of computer lab assistant are Judy Quint, Mary Largo, Jennifer Karen, and Cynthia Allen. Judy Quint, Mary Largo, Jennifer Karen, and Cynthia Allen will be placed on the civil service preferred eligibility list for 4 years, which is maintained by the Clinton County Department of Personnel. Item F, abolish the competitive position of account clerk typist. The person with the least seniority in the title of account clerk typist is Jan Garrett. Jan Garrett will be placed on a civil service preferred eligibility list for 4 years, which is maintained by the Clinton County Department of Personnel. Item G, abolish the competitive position of two typists. The person with the least seniority and the title of typist are Carol Castellucci and Ellen Hall. Carol Castellucci and Ellen Hall will be placed on the civil service preferred eligibility list for 4 years, which will be maintained by the Clinton County Department of Personnel.
Move the list.
Any questions on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Passed. We go on to resignations. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept the following resignation on the date indicated.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Again? Ayes have it. Appointments. Item A, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to change a 2-year probationary appointment of Amy Palmer, beginning September 1, 2009, and ending on August 31, 2011, from the board meeting minutes of August 4, 2009, to that of a 3-year probationary appointment in the tenure area of special education, beginning September 1, 2009, and ending on August 31, 2012. Amy Palmer holds an initial certificate in the area of students with disabilities, grades 1 through 6. Motion by Rick. Second by Kathy. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item B, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to rescind the resolution of Carol Boris from the board meeting minutes of December 13, 2004, and change the 2-year probationary appointment as a Title I math teacher with certification in mathematics and N64 effective September 1, 2003, from the board meeting minutes of June 10, 2003, to that of the two-year probationary appointment in the tenure area of elementary beginning September 1, 2003, and ending on August 31, 2005, with tenure granted in the area of elementary effective September 1, 2005. Carol Boris holds a permanent certificate in the area of N6.
Second.
Richard and Carol?
Carol.
Mm-hmm. Any discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item C, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to appoint Russell Gray in a two-year probationary appointment in the tenure area of English effective 9/1/11 and ending on August 31st, 2013 at a salary of $55,427. Russell Gray holds permanent certification in the area of English 7 through 12. Richard and Carol, second.
If I could. Just for clarification, this is the gentleman that in a prior resolution his position was eliminated. Is that correct?
Yep, the individual is transferring into a new tenure track for a probationary period, so listed in the backfilling. That position is not being backfilled, that he's vacating. Okay. That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
With the position being abolished effective June 30th and the new one starting 9/1, what happens to his benefits for July and August? What happens in that two-month window?
My understanding is that with continuous employment, the insurance is carried through the summer.
Okay.
I'm saying that publicly because I think we've had that question before in previous years. I thought that was the answer provided, but I can verify that for the board, certainly. But that's my understanding, that if it's continuous employment, just a new assignment, that it would carry through.
And if it isn't, we can always change it.
Yes, we
mm-hmm.
can
yep.
always
change
the resolution.
Yep.
Yep. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Okay, item D. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept Janelle Waldron's resignation as an elementary teacher effective June 30, 2011, and appoint her to a two-year probationary appointment in the tenure area of special education effective September 1, 2011, and ending on August 31, 2013, at a salary of $51,700.
Joanne? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9?
Okay.
We'll give you a $9 leeway.
It is at the end, right?
Yeah,
the digit's at the end.
Okay. Whatever the real number is, I'm like, okay.
The digit's at the end.
Need a motion.
Sorry.
Motion.
Second.
Sorry.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item E, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education the following fall athletic positions for the 2011-12 school year as indicated.
Move the list.
Second.
Richard Carroll?
Richard
and Carroll.
Carroll. Any questions?
Yes.
Yes.
I noticed we had a letter in there from Matt, I can't think of his last name at the top, volunteering. Do you want to address that?
Jet, is it a good time to do that? In your board packet, I submitted or made copies of a letter that was submitted by, I got to find Matt's letter, actually it's right here, by Matt Drown, who had approached me and then with the printed letter asking, as you can see in the letter, for the board to consider allowing him to proceed with an effort to resurrect the projected cut in the track program for next year, that he would like to take a lead in volunteering to run that program or getting individuals that he could agree to also agree to run the program. And so with his a letter, of course, I wanted to present it to the board in your packet so I could have some sense of direction to give Matt. I would think there are a number of issues to be talked through relative to responsibilities to run a program like this in terms of fingerprinting and clearance through SED and coaching requirements, etc. And I've mentioned those things to Matt already, so they're not a surprise. But in terms of the board's interest, if you would like him to proceed with his efforts with no or some restrictions as you shall choose to place on him, I'd be glad to respond to his letter.
Well, I would be interested that either you or the athletic director or both together can meet with him and see if you can work out something workable. And then if you can, then I'd like to see if we could do it. I mean, if he's going to do it for nothing, and there's nobody else saying I have to do it, you have to pay me, or anything of that issue, which I don't know, that if it's a doable thing, I'm interested in pursuing it.
What does the athletic director say about his qualifications to take on this?
We haven't gotten that far yet, other than you see in his letter what his accomplishments were as an athlete in the sport. And I, as I said, I only mentioned to him briefly that any and all requirements for an otherwise coach to coach a program like this, he'd have to meet that. But we just didn't go into the details of what his plan was. He just was very enthusiastic young man. Assured me that there were a lot of other enthusiastic individuals like himself who just wanted the program to continue and understood that the budget limitations were the primary reason why it wasn't, and he would like to see if he could step in and resolve that for next year. So if I could draw from this brief conversation, my acknowledgement of the interest to proceed with, I assume, no assurance on it's a go, I'd like him to present a real, after he's done his work on it, what's the proposal of how he would run this and bring this back to the board for your understanding before he's given the go-ahead to do it. Would that make sense to do it that way?
Or could he, okay. If necessary, could he meet with the athletic director to see what he would have to show?
You bet.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get him advised of his requirements and or any other volunteers that he thinks he can secure. That may be harder. I mean, it's easier or harder to do, obviously, than maybe his excitement to want to do it. I want to be sure he's got enough people that are stepping up and have met the same obligations to pull this off. The last thing we'd want is one person running a whole program because the others couldn't do it or chose not to do it or whatever. So we'd want a real committed plan on his part, and I would bring that back to the full board. Okay.
Any other questions for... Hey, all in favor of this?
I just want to clarify. The total of that column, the top, says 10-11. That's because the BTA previously had agreed to concessions, keeping those stipends flat with the current year. I just want to, that's not a typo. That's intentional. That was to reflect those stipends remained the same.
That's right.
Okay. And additionally, on this list, there are 6 teachers that stepped up and actually additionally gave further concessions and volunteered and didn't take stipends to coach.
So we have freezes or better all across the board.
The freezes were known at budget time that the BTA.
The stipend freezes,
we're
correct.
Keeping the stipends the same. The new information is there's 6 teachers on here waiving their stipends.
Yeah. We want to thank them teachers.
Yes.
We'll get notification of who they are. We can identify it. You can tell me. Oh, they're listed? I'm sorry. Oh, just with the. I'm sorry. I misunderstood. I got you. Okay. They are identified with 0 stipends next to their names.
Ron is here. Thank you.
Where's Ron? Nope. Yep. Okay. Okay. F? Or did you vote on it?
We vote on that one. Huh?
There's a motion.
All in favor?
No,
is that a
okay.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Carry. Yes.
Just to give the board the correct figure on deed. The number is 51,977.
977?
That's where the 9 went? Yeah. Okay.
It wasn't the last number.
Okay. That's why we check.
Item F, Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following substitute appointments beginning on the date indicated.
Motion.
Motion by Colleen.
Second.
Second by Karen. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item G, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following temporary on-call appointments beginning on the date indicated.
Motion.
Motion by Richard. Second by Kathy. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. H, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to appoint the following temporary summer help on or around 6/27 through or around 8/19/11.
Move
the
list.
Second.
I just want to ask a question.
Yes.
I just want to know, is this already been budgeted for?
Yes.
Summer help. Yes,
there is a budget allotment, and this maximizes what we budgeted.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Okay, item four, unpaid leave. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept the unpaid leave of absence for Steve Rosinski, secondary English teacher, for 4/8/11, 4/11/11 half day, 4/12/11 half day, 4/13/11 half day, 4/15/11 half day, 4/25/11, 4/26/11, 4/28/11 half day, 5/3/11 half day, 5/4/11, 5/16/11, and 5/17/11.
Motion.
Motion by Red.
Second.
Second by Carol. Questions? I think I got a question. Is what is happening here?
The individual has there's a certain amount of days in the contract for which an employee has for sick days, and then there's a procedure that's invoked when you excise or exceed those sick days, which includes notification from the medical doctor, etc. Petitioning perhaps in some cases to the association to have time donated on behalf of the employee. But there is no provision in any language that would indicate that taking the day without pay is the, when you are out of time, is all that's needed to be done. What is needed to be done is to request medical leave for that for the time that exceeds what is contractually allowed. Otherwise, it's the risk, of course, in the employee group is that individuals, in fact, are making a decision that on their own to affect whether they are absent or not. But the burden on the district is to accommodate for the frequency of those requests in terms of getting subs. And there's procedure that I just went through that would indicate it's acknowledged these absences are occurring as opposed to after the fact explaining that they did occur. So those dates speak for the excess dates beyond what the employee has in his sick day, in his accumulated sick days.
Red?
Are these few enough not to affect leave earning status during the year? Because you earn so much for a year, but if you don't work so many days, doesn't it affect how many days you earn?
Need Jen for that answer. I'm stuck. Jen?
Gives years of credit to the district. Instead of getting credit for 208 days this year, he's going to get all that dump it out. So he won't get a full 200 days.
Okay.
So
I'm sorry. That's what you meant.
Service with the district.
I got it. Yeah, he's lost pay on the days. But the resolution is necessary to acknowledge that these are unpaid days. That's the point of the resolution.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item B, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept the unpaid leave of absence for Gordon Torville as a custodial worker from 6/8 to 12/7/11. Motion by Red.
Second.
Second by Karen. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Okay, item D. Nope. tenure. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following tenure appointments effective on the date indicated.
Move the list.
Second. Well, Pauline, I heard first.
Take her.
Sorry. Her second.
And
take Pauline.
Carol.
Okay. Pauline Carol?
Yeah.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Against?
Can we congratulate
them? Yeah, acknowledgments for Leanne's always here in the front row, but of course, Leanne Short, Director of Special Services, congratulations to you. I don't know if all individuals with late invitation to be present tonight are here. I'm going to just simply check to see if Jamie Billington is here. Yeah. Jamie, there you are. Congratulations, Jamie. Heather Bergerman, I know, is here. Heather over here. Congratulations to you, Heather. Dan Carter, where's Dan Carter? Dan Carter. Congratulations to Dan. And I did see Shannon Pichet Smith, who is also here. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Okay. We thank you very much, Sarah, all of us. Okay, miscellaneous. A, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the professional development for the 2011-12 school year.
Motion.
Motion I read. Carol, second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item B, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to schedule Tuesday, July 5th at 6:15 p.m. in the middle school, high school library as a date for the reorganizational meeting of the district.
Motion.
Motion by Richard.
Second.
Second by Carol.
The day after the 4th of July, do we have to be turkey?
First Tuesday in a month. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item C, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education that the Beatontown Central School District intends to participate in the 2012 Special Education School-Age Summer School and agrees to pay the actual CEWW BOCES cost for the 2012 summer school. Motion by Richard, second by Carol. Yes, Kathy.
Last year, we had to agree on a speculation on what the cost was going to be. Is that a continuation? Is it always going to be their speculation? And we have to agree to it multiple years at a time? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yep, I do. I'm going to try to, I might need, as your representation on the BOCES board, some input, if you will, Mr. Levine. BOCES required for them to enter into the assurance that summer school would be available for the special needs children, that all school districts had to agree to pay the difference between the actual cost for summer school versus the amount of, for want of a better phrase, the foundation money that, that BOCES was going to be given by the state. And that stems from a long... That stems from a long period of time where BOCES, I believe, was going deeper and deeper in the red to run special education summer school because the actual costs came in higher than the state would allow the aid to be. So the resolution was school districts can either choose to take on special education summer school themselves, which is terribly expensive, or all school districts could agree that whatever the costs were based on the populations to be served, the resolution would say, we promise, and they needed all of them to promise, we'll make up the difference. So that's the history to it. The actual costs, obviously, are year to year. There's no way of knowing at this time what 2 summers from now the actual summer school costs will be. But for them to have assurances that they will do summer school in 2 years, they're asking for a renewal annually of the same provision. That, and to find out if school districts, all the districts agree or not. If all the districts do not agree, they're giving ample notification to individual, all of the districts, that summer school for special needs populations are to be borne by your individual district at whatever cost your district assigns to that, to run that program. It's certainly, Leanne, if you don't mind, I'm going to call on you a little bit for this. In terms of aid by running summer school through BOCES.
Summer school is just simply set by the rate setting unit. So there isn't necessarily an aid. I get back, you know, X amount. It is what it is. So when all people who do summer school send their stuff in, the rate setting unit, it's always 2 or 3 years behind the cost, basically goes through averages and makes a specific amount that you get. So if you have a child with higher needs, it doesn't really matter. That is X number. The only difference is if you have an aid that goes with that child, then there's a provision for that. So that's where BOCES was having a difficult time. So we did meet this year, and we all worked together to make sure it was as low as possible. It's a half hour shorter. We did some things like that. She looked at different cost-cutting measures. So we're hoping it won't be a large gap. But that's how it all works.
But they were more, they were accommodating.
Yeah, you know, we felt they really were. They did some things, and then we met a CSE chair as we went through. They basically line item by line item.
Okay.
Good.
That was it.
Cool.
Right.
As a BOCES recommended rep for me, I have a couple concerns on this issue. I'm just going to throw them out there. So you know what I'm not recommending that we don't do it, but I have issues. I feel that the cuts are so hard in some areas that I'm worried about service. That I think money is driving factor more than the needs of the child in some instances. In fact, personally, I would rather we pay a little bit more sometimes than cut services as much as we're looking at. Like, for example, they're going to have 88 special ed kids going through to eat breakfast and lunch, and they say they're supposed to have a hot meal. One person for 5.5 hours is supposed to be able to do that. Do both meals, clean up, be the cashier, everything. And I just, they can't convince me that they can do that in time. And, personally, I want all of our kids to have a hot meal. And if they're going to have to go to a sandwich to do it, then I'm not happy. I would rather pay a little bit more than to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's my issue, that we don't really have a say into what they cut or where they cut it. They cut it and give it to us. It's okay, here, it's nice and cheap. But is it so cheap that we're shorting our children? So that's my issue. I would like to have more input on the subject, and they say, okay, here's how much it's going to cost, but the amount of time given for people to do the job has to be adequate to do the job. So, and that's my concern going forward. I think that cuts are being cut so much that I just don't think that they can do in the amount of hours that they're getting. So I just, going into the future, I really have concerns about, yes, we have to save money, but how much do we have to save even if the kids have to suffer for it? That's
and are you saving it in the right places?
Yes. So that I'm just throwing it out there because we've had discussions, and you know, one person says they can do it in the amount of time, another person says they can't. What do you believe? You know, and you know, the kids are gonna suffer for it. So I'll be monitoring it this summer, making sure that they are getting the services that they say they're going to give them. And if it doesn't happen, then we're going to have, I want to have a discussion again before next year. Mm-hmm. That, yes, we want to save money, but how much is enough?
So just to ask.
Oh. Yeah.
I just want to throw out that we've got to keep in mind that we already have established a budget that the board acted upon for next year that has X number of dollars in it. And even though we may want something more, we're going to be limited as to what we can do. And everybody is going to be responsible, I hope, for their own budget transfers. So having said that, to me, if I'm BOCES, I have to look within to see how this is going to be managed there. Because as soon as it starts spreading out to the districts where we have to manage our budget, we're all going to be in trouble. It's not an easy time, but I don't want to see children deprived either, but we've got to remember how all of this works. And
I don't disagree with what I'm saying about going forward, but you need to understand, because BOCES doesn't work the way we work. That's what it takes for them to make their budget. They're going to make it, whether you agree with it or not. I want you to know that, okay, this is how much it is. Well, they're saying they can do it for this much, and they'll do it for that much. But if they have to cut services to do it, if they're off, they'll cut it. So I just want you to know that if you get a call from a constituent down the road saying, my kid doesn't have time to eat, or I don't think my kid's getting this or that, then you know.
Okay.
That we're looking, I mean, how much are you willing to cut? But, you know, personally, that, because you tell them to cut it in half, they'll probably could do it. But are they going to do the service that you want for that money? And that's all I'm saying. It's because they do it differently. They don't have the input that we have in this board. They just present it to you. It's done differently, so.
Ed?
And I agree with Karen, but to follow your sentiment, do we have enough itemized information on paper with BOCES that lets us know that how it's happening? Because I mean, at the end of the day, we're a customer. So for us to know how the money's being spent and if the money's being addressed the correct way or how it's being managed, we should have some sort of feedback on itemization. Do we have that? And if not,
we can request it.
Why not?
We can request it.
Why aren't we? I mean, we pay them a lot of money. We should have a report, a monthly report that says, here's where all the money's gone. Is that not standard practice right now?
Well, that part of the problem is also the way, like we do like cost centers.
Yeah.
It might not, you know, within a reason, I mean, it might not tell you what everybody's getting or, you know. But, you know what I'm saying? The way we do a cost center, we do the presentation of the budget, it doesn't say what every person makes or what makes it in that area.
No, I understand it, but the onus is on us not to expect some final tally at the end of the year and hope that all the numbers weren't just managed to fit the right end of your product. But if you get a monthly itemized piece of information.
In effect, if I'm correct in your question, in effect, can there be a monthly description of the expenses incurred in that month?
Absolutely.
And for what purpose they were incurred?
Right.
Program that we're buying.
Yes.
Do you get a monthly report when you go to your meeting?
No,
like what you get?
We get a total, but I mean, it's like Karen. You'd have to be Karen.
We can certainly request that they break that out.
Because it's all numbers.
Right.
You know, I can tell you what the answer is.
Well,
when I get
how do we measure? How do you measure the value and performance of a product if you don't have status reports? Every business does it. There's no reason. I know they function differently than we do, but if some of our staff has a problem with how they're providing support for us, how do we support our staff in their complaint? Or
just well, that's something we have to discuss down the road because I don't think right now there's any mechanism.
So we have no way to measure the value of what we're getting.
With respect to this particular resolution, I believe we could look back on the year and say what were the services delivered to special needs students in the summertime for this cost.
Yeah, but, also
but you're asking about
this,
a bigger picture just, question.
But it's highlighted kind of a
yeah, I understand.
A scenario.
Certainly can ask the question of the BOCES business officials to determine what can be done or why it couldn't.
Because what's going to happen is as people start asking about budgets, mm-hmm. how we manage our financial responsibilities. If someone asks, well, how do you know how the money's being spent? We're not going to have an answer, and we're not going to look very good.
You okay with doing that?
And I'm just going to offer an opinion. This is my opinion. I'm thinking that our administrator probably knows what's going on with our students at the BOCES, so I'm comfortable that if she didn't feel that something needed to be done that wasn't getting done, I'm sure she would act on that. So I just wanted to throw that in.
I'm just offering you more support, whatever, from our side to back you up more.
We do get it. This helps. On every student, every month, I get a list for the student, their classroom, and a breakdown of their services and the bill in that capacity. Mm-hmm. I do that, and I review it monthly. I didn't, and when we talked about summer programming, I mean, we were down dirty talking to the pool. There was a big discussion, should we keep it? And basically being the counter vote, because yes, we should, because it's heated, it's therapeutic for my kids with muscles, things
right,
of that
right.
nature. You know, I didn't think we needed to be that, you know, financially responsible. But I didn't know the piece about only hiring one person. They just said that they would be offering breakfast and lunch because it was a big discussion. Are we going to offer both? And we felt, yes, many of our students require that. So that's where it was. We weren't privy to the fact there would be one person doing it. But I go over. I do make random visits. So when I'm over there checking on my babes, I'll
Great. And you're ready to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Okay, we have item D, that on us. I'll read these things. On Monday, June 13, 2011, John Sims personally delivered a notice of petition to the district clerk in the matter of Jane Donahue Holly Sims on behalf of the residents of the Beatmantown Central School District from action of the school board of the Board of Education of the Beatmantown Central School District regarding the results of the May 17, 2011 Proposition 1 and Proposition 2 vote. Reserved that the Board of Education does authorize the school attorney to respond to the said petition. This is what we're asking.
Motion.
Second. Seconded by Pauline. Any discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. On to the financials. Item A, resolve that the Board of Education accept the following reports as presented by the Audit Committee.
Second.
Richard and Carol. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item B, resolve that the Board of Education acknowledge receipt on the warrant report for April 2011.
Second.
Richard, Carol. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item C, resolve that the Board of Education acknowledge receipt of the budget transfer and due to and due from reports of April 2011.
Motion.
Motion second. By Carol. Second by Kathy. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item D, resolved that the Board of Education does hereby authorize the following bands for buses at the lowest interest rate possible and on the maturity date indicated.
Motion.
Motion by second. Pauline. Second by Carol. We need a roll call on this.
Chair Armstrong?
Yes.
Kathy Buckley?
Yes. Leonard
Kane?
Yes.
Jim Johnson?
Yes.
Ed Merritt?
Yes.
Carol Reitz?
Yes.
Pauline Stone?
Yes.
Steve Tremblay?
Item E, resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve school bus lease agreement with the following organizations: Town of Plattsburgh and the Beatmantown Youth Commission.
Second.
Richard and Karen? Any discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? The ayes have it. Item F, resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept the following donations of approximately $2,300 of weight training equipment from Michael Musso.
Second.
Richard and Carol. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item G, resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept the following grant in the amount of $5,321 and approve amending the district budget for the special aid fund for the remaining 2010-11 school year to reflect the May 11, 2011 New York State Education Department Grant Award. Karen, Kathy. It's a roll call.
Karen Armstrong?
Yes.
Kathy Buckley?
Yes.
Leonard King?
Yes.
Dan Brodsky? Rachel Levine?
Yes.
Ed Marin?
Yes.
Carol Reitz?
Yes.
Pauline Stone?
Yes.
Steve Drumblay?
Item H, resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following transfers over $5,000.
Motion.
Motion by Karen.
Second.
Second by Pauline. Any discussion? Roll call.
Karen Karen Armstrong.
Yes.
Kathy Buckley.
Yes.
Leonard King.
Yes.
Dan Karofsky. Richard Levine.
Yes.
Ed Marin.
Yes.
Carol Reyes.
Yes.
Colleen Stone.
Yes.
Steve Trumbly.
Okay, additional items to discuss. Yes.
I've got two. If I get through it, I sound like a frog. I'm sorry. First of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Slattery and the staff and teachers at Beavantown Elementary School for making me feel so welcome this past year as a representative from the board. Mr. Slattery brought me around, showed me the school, introduced me to the teachers, and I was invited to everything that went on at the school. I attended several PTO meetings, Eagle Pride assemblies, and I was even invited to classrooms. I went to one classroom and listened to stories that the children made books. I went to another classroom and the children dressed up in period costumes. It was really great. I even went to another classroom and we made centerpieces, and I got to bring it home. It's just a great school, and we're really fortunate to have such great teachers and an administrator in the district. Now, the second item I want to bring up is recently in the paper there was a article on pension spiking. I was under the impression when we do a teacher's contract, if it was across the board, they'd get 3%, 2% raise. Now, is that true, or?
When in negotiations?
In negotiations, yes.
If I'm following your question, the negotiations process involves a set amount of money that the board sets as parameters to be negotiated with the association. And then it is distributed in the lanes or the salary steps, if you will. It's possible that, in reference to that comment, it's possible that there are individuals within the salary scale that in any given year, for a number of reasons, might in fact make a percentage higher than anybody else, somewhere else that you could locate in the salary schedule. If the interpretation from that is that it is, using that term that you referenced, I don't know how to respond to that. I can only say that within the salary distribution, there are periods, there are blocks where individuals may be frozen for a year and then recoup it in another year. And there are also, of course, teachers that perform additional duties with stipends that are factored on top of and inclusive of salary, which are not guaranteed every year anyway. They're just additional compensations. Does that help you with the question?
I have two things also, and one of them deals with pension spiking, and I have a statement I'd like to read, if you don't mind. After reading the letter to the editor on pension spiking, I've reached a point where I am tired of the district and our staff getting slammed by people in and from the news media. I have done the work and analyzed the facts. In my opinion, this is something that was not done by Mr. Sims, the author of the letter to the editor. The information on the see-through website is for the calendar year 2008, 2009, and 2010, not the school district's fiscal year. The salary information there not only includes the contract salary of the employees, it includes retroactive pay because the contract was not settled. And it includes any additional monies that the staff earned, whether it was for coaching or any other duties that are a part of the contractual agreements the district has with its employees. Mr. Sims referenced two employees. The first was supposed to have received a contractual salary of $85,101, a 19% increase. This is not true. The person's actual salary increase after 31 years of experience and 45 credit hours beyond his BA was 2.21%. The second person was supposed to have received a contractual salary of $92,365, an 18% increase. This also is not true. The person's actual salary increase after 33 years of experience and 27 credit hours beyond his BA was 2.14%. I've analyzed the salary schedules. The BCS teachers are not engaging in pension spiking. There are steps missing in the salary schedules, and the teachers sit on those steps for 1 or 2 years with minimal raises. When they are able to finally advance to the next step on the salary schedule, they get the value of the steps that are missing or not included in the schedule. I will be happy to review all of the facts with the board at any time you would like. In my opinion, that after the review, the board should consider meeting with the Press Republican editor and set the record straight, or I will be submitting a letter to the editor stating the actual facts. The other thing that I would like to bring up, Pauline and I have visited about this, is the editorial from the WPTZ, again, about our district. And we have prepared a letter, which we would like you as a board to review. And then we would like to do a rebuttal to WPTZ and perhaps put this also in the Press Republican. If we meet with the editor, or again, make it a part of letters to the editor or points of view. So if you get a chance, or if you would just read over this, if you don't mind.
What are the wishes of the board?
I'm fine with it. Thank
you. Yes, Kathy.
I do have one wording issue. And the only reason why I'm bringing it up is I feel that it is an emotion-based statement.
Okay.
And
which one is that?
Right here. We do think that if you can really mistake an answer. To me, that discredits what you've done because it's a level of sarcasm. And I realize you're kind of quoting.
Did you read this?
I have read it.
Okay. And that's okay with me. I can take that comment out.
Okay.
You agree, Pauline?
Mm-hmm.
But it was to be a little sarcastic, yes, because of what they had done to us.
Right. But I think responding in an emotional and angry way discredits.
It's a good thing my brother didn't write this letter.
I know.
He had something to say about a skunk, if you get my drift.
That's not in here, though. That's skunk parts. That's not in here.
No.
Just for,
yeah, Sam.
Yeah, I like, for those who don't have ever seen this, you did a good job of explaining why the board manage the fund balance the way it did. I think one of the things that you pointed out is you assume that he did not attend, but it wouldn't hurt to put in there how many public sessions we included. Wayne will point out there, statistics that were taken, that information was gathered from the public as people came to visit to show that there was an interest in trying to gather information for the public. I do like the fact that you didn't really go into too much detail in the second half. I think we do have to take our lumps on the mistake with the machines and all that. I mean, no, I can't disagree with them. It's a ridiculous mistake. It happens, but it's a mistake we have to just take. You know, we have to take the criticism.
That's what makes us human.
Right, right. And you didn't address that, and that's great because.
And in the second paragraph, we assume that Mr. Sands did not attend one of the five informational meetings. So that's in there.
Right.
That we did have five meetings altogether to explain the budget.
Actually, he was in the crowd at one of them meetings.
See, I know him, and I didn't see him there at all.
Came out to talk to you.
No, she didn't.
Yes, he did.
I know him personally.
Because he talked. He asked your name.
Liz,
yes.
Tastes great. The thing that I'd like to say is there's been a lot of the Beekman Town bashing in the school, teacher bashing, and on and on and on. And my comment is this. All these accusations, we even had someone here who came in one day and said we were taking kickbacks.
Really?
Yeah. All of these questions have been answered more than once in our meetings, in our budget presentations. And I would ask all of the people who cover us, the radio stations, the newspaper, WPTZ, there's never been a question where that $7 million went. We've said it over and over and over again, and they keep printing it wrong. And at what point do they have no credibility because they're just trying to stir a situation up rather than report facts? And I'm glad that we're doing a rebuttal because we've never hidden what we've done. And in fact, I think our problem is we're too transparent because we do tell them everything and then we're in the paper every week. Not that I don't want to do it, but you tell them the truth and we get blasted for it, but we're going to tell the truth.
Well, they do a good job of beating up other schools because they're having such big budget problems. I mean, they are media. Their job is to make money off of some of their media.
It seems that we're number one, though.
Yeah, you know, it always seems like that if you're the one getting hit, right?
Yeah.
But I saw the Sands thing on PTZ. It kind of took me back a little bit, but you have to take that criticism. I mean, we're human, but, you know, this mistake can cost jobs. It can, it's, I mean, look, when I was in the Air Force, I could say the same answer. Look, I'm human, but three of my guys got killed. You know, there are some mistakes that are greater than others. And as a school, we have to try to do a better job of creating checklists and things to catch ourselves. And so the gravity is if, yes, making a mistake makes us human. The gravity is if we don't create mechanisms to stop this from happening again. That's
Mr. Amo, you have a comment?
Just a quick comment, and that is it is always helpful when the media contacts me for information prior to releasing stories. The history on success with that has not been terribly good. Report card grade of A to F wouldn't be the top of the class, wouldn't necessarily be at the bottom of the class, but certainly would be a questionable grade. I avail myself to the media as often as I possibly can. I answer questions when I'm contacted. In this particular editorial, there was no effort on the individual's part to contact me, so I can't speak to what was spoken to because we had no conversation before, during, or since. So I say again as a public statement of assurance to those in the audience that when contacted by constituents, be they press or be they individuals in the community, I respond. And maybe the answer isn't as comforting, depending on your point of view, but it's the best answer I have at the time and with the information that I have. And I will continue to do so. It's a little disheartening from my role. It becomes disheartening because I feel it's a defenseless position to respond to, But the board can do something, and the leadership that's been exhibited tonight is seeking, I think, permission to go ahead and do that. So I applaud that. Thank you.
So is it the wishes of the board to have Karen develop this, redo this couple items here, there, and have our president sign it and have it sent in?
So how do you want to do it? Do you want to try to approach the editor to have these things published? Meaning it becomes a news story? Maybe we'll make front page. I doubt it.
All I can say is we send this letter to them, and what they do with it, I guess it's up to them. We can't control what they're going
to
do.
But we won't address it to the editor, or a letter to the editor is what I'm trying to get at.
Oh, you're looking for direction.
Or do you want to set up a meeting with them first? Deal with PTZ or Press Republican?
Yeah. You'll bring it in?
Yeah.
Okay. Pauline, if it's agreeable, Pauline and I will work together. Now, do you want me to hand you the document that I've done to back up my first reading to you?
Yeah, that's fine.
And is it okay if we cover both areas with the editor? I'll be happy to go in with you. Unless we're overstepping our bounds. Do you think Steve and you want to go in, or?
No, go ahead. I mean, developing this here, and.
You're okay then?
Yeah.
And do you want any of this, or we'll go over it if you want, whatever you want to do?
There's two different ones. There's the WPTZ, and then there's the Press Republic.
Right, but I'm thinking a lot of people will watch WPTZ. Pauline says that there's a rebuttal, that he'll read it.
Yeah, you can send it right into him, and he will read it. But
why can't it be to the Press Republican also?
And the paper
so
also.
The readers are there's an outreach to the readers. But I'm only one person. That's why we're talking about this as a board. Is that okay with you that we do both with the Press Republican and do the rebuttal
right.
to
WPTZ? What I'm asking is, how are you going to do one of them? Do you want to set up a meeting with one of them or both of them? Or do you just want to send out the letter by itself?
We'll probably combine these two and meet with the Press Republican would be my thought.
Okay.
And we'll do a rebuttal to WPTZ.
With just that one, yeah.
With just this one, after the revisions.
Yes, sir. Maybe
a suggestion. Remember during the budget presentation, everybody keeps saying, where's all the money and everything? I don't think people grasp how much money we've either been cut or increased costs. Would it not be a good idea that the budget, we had the budget when Mr. Amo put down, we lost so many millions, and this cost went up, and then have that as a public saying, look, you know, this is a swing here. This is where the money went. You know, that we were
slides.
Cut aid, plus we have increased costs.
Big slides.
Just put it up there.
I think you're right. I think that's a good thing, because I recently have seen a document that's been circulating around that addresses before Mr. Amo's time, where a certain person was quoted that the Board of Education was going to cause a financial difficulty in this district.
Yes.
So I think it is very good to have the information. It's not our fault that the state aid was cut over $3 million.
No.
But
I do remember that, and I remember the conversation. The problem was the person didn't want us to give the money back. They wanted to keep it.
Yeah.
That was a discussion, saying, well, no, don't give it back. You'll be in financial difficulty if you do. So it wasn't like it was projected to us on the little paper.
We'll revise the letter. We'll put it out to you in an email form.
Yeah, but I don't think we should put too much in it.
Right.
You know what I mean? You put too much in it, and then they just
lose
it all. You know
right.
what I mean?
I think it'd be good to talk about the state aid cut. I really do.
You have my PowerPoint presentations have the slide information.
Yeah.
If that helps in your final draft, by all means, I'll be glad to recreate it for you, and you can pick and choose what you like.
Because I think it's really important, because we're putting $3.5 million in the budget,
okay.
but we've lost between the increased costs and what we lost, it's more than that.
All right, let's carry on then. Next item is public comment again. Anybody for public comment?
Wow.
I'd like to thank Mrs. Armstrong, Grandma, for doing the fact finding. We have been taking it on the chin. I might be overstepping my bounds, but I would recommend that you take the steps to control your message, whatever, so they can't put a spin on it. And that's what's happening here. Opinion, put it in the opinion section so that you get your message out, not their interpretation.
Okay, thank you for your suggestion.
Who was Claremont, was the person we spoke to?
Lois.
Lois. Yeah, Lois Claremont.
I know her personally.
Yep. Good.
Anybody else for public comment? I guess we don't need a executive board session, so. Richard?
Second.
Carol, second. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Who's here?